Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
My wife has popped into studio, as she is prone to do. It's been suggested by several listeners. I keep getting messages from people who say, you and your wife should do a podcast.
Isn't that what we're doing right now?
Kind of. If we did a podcast, it would have to be with you leading the podcast. I do enough radio leading. If we did a podcast, it would have to be like your podcast and I'm the sidekick.
I just can't think that we would have enough interesting things to talk about that people would want to listen to that.
Man, we might. Let's, for example, talk about. Okay, first of all, you missed it earlier in the show. I had a emotional moment earlier in the show. You'll be happy to hear that because normally it's you on this radio show. This voice is cracking. Mm-hmm. What got me was, so for listeners who didn't catch it, go back and listen to the podcast. But I wrote a column this morning about my dad and his dream as a major league baseball player and a professional baseball player, and how he was 24 years old, and it's bothered me for decades that he walked away. And what I realize now as a grown-up with three kids of my own is that there are things that are bigger than your own dreams, like your dreams of your kid and your family. And my dad wasn't necessarily walking away from his dream. He was walking towards his family. And I write that column, and then you create this group text message. This is what killed me. There's like eight people on it. First of all, I hate group text messages. Can't stand them. And I cannot figure out how to not have it alert me every time there's a message. So it's just like, bing, 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 everybody. But sister-in-law, Angelica, pointing out that it hit her right in the feels, she said. And then my brother saying left him in tears. And I, on air, had an emotional moment about it, you know? And why is that important to you to create a group family message like that?
Well, because I know that you're not going to toot your own horn to the family about something beautiful that you've written about, Dad.
I didn't even tell him I wrote it.
Curious. Have you heard from him?
No, and I won't.
And you won't?
And I won't.
Because he's going to be embarrassed.
There's nothing to be said.
Yeah.
What's been said is public. This is what I remember my dad. And my dad's this way. My dad is a softie. Okay, and yes. I think I am probably too, like
deep down under all those layers.
But my dad's the same way, and I can remember one time my dad got sick. I was like 15-ish. He had an infection, mm-hmm. and he got had to go to the ICU because literally he didn't take care of the infection in his leg, and he got like. It was
MRSA type thing.
Not
right?
MRSA, but it was like poisoning him, and
he
had to go to the
sepsis.
Yeah,
sepsis.
It was basically like you need to be in the ICU. I can remember coming in there, and your dad is like this bastion of strength, and seeing him in the hospital bed, mm-hmm. and it just killed me. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't talk to that, you know, to that end. I could not speak. So all I said to him was I mumbled something about a baseball card I had gotten that day. And like, you know, it's this awkward conversation. I got a Will Clark baseball card or something, you know. It was just like an awkward conversation about it. So, no, nothing will be said. Doesn't need to be said. He'll probably later tell me, like, some correction. It'll be like, you know, I actually knew it wasn't my time because, you know, they had given up on me or whatever. He'll try to make it a logical thing, but you're 24. I was 24. I was hanging out in a bar.
So do you think you would have come to that understanding about the decision he made prior to becoming a parent yourself?
No.
So it took you becoming a dad. It
took me not only becoming a dad, but being a dad for like 17 years, you know, having three kids.
You're a fast learner.
Here's what got me. I wrote it. I was writing this column. I did not know how I was going to end the column when I write it. I never do. I'm writing it. It's just sort of free flowing. And then it hit me. It just hit me. And I go, oh, I've had it wrong all this time. I didn't need a time machine because I always felt like if I could get a time machine, like if you could get a time machine, go back and visit your parents.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Have you not had that thought?
Totally.
I would go back and I'd tell them what?
Don't buy a crappy motel in Northeast Portland. Do some other business. Go, you know, when you come over from Taiwan in 1979, don't come up to Portland when everybody else went to Los Angeles. Just go where everybody else went and stay with the rest of the family so you don't go it alone.
Did they get ripped off? Do you think there was like a realtor who said, oh, they're right off the boat?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, not off the boat. It was a 747 that we came over on.
They're right off the 747.
Yeah, right off the 747, you know. They had a little bit of money from Grandpa, and the realtor saw an opportunity. So, yeah. So, yeah, but, you know, it's hard. You can't live that way, though. You can't live in the past and try to correct what has already
been. But don't we, though? I mean, that, like, it's human nature. I'm sure our kids will wonder someday, you know, why Oregon? Why here? You know, why didn't Mom stay with anchoring and reporting? She was a 2-time Emmy winner. She could have been on the NBC Nightly News. Why isn't she doing that stuff? They might wonder that.
Maybe.
Why did she give up her dream?
I didn't, though. See, that's the thing, is I chose, same as your dad, like, I chose family. I didn't give it up. I chose to do something different. I'm still using my skills with the show that I do on Mondays, thankfully, because that's my sanity. I think I'd go crazy if I didn't have that outlet. But I realized that it just wasn't the type of profession that I could feel good about, you know, and a lot of people do it. A lot of people balance it well, and kudos to them. That's amazing. But I just didn't want to give up that time, especially when the kids are this young.
I remember you saying, because here you were, anchor, reporter, you know, successful, making a good living. You've had opportunities to leave and go. I remember, you know, you going to New York to meet with ABC about, you know, possibly one day being a correspondent and all that. And you could have gone down that path. But I remember when you stepped away when, you know, our first daughter was born. You saying, you making the comment, why didn't I do this before?
Yeah, just, you know, I think a lot of people can relate to that. The minute you have a kid, it's just everything changes. Everything changes. All your priorities change. Everything that you thought was important before is not as important. But that's for me. You know, that's not for everybody. There's a lot of fantastic parents out there, moms in particular, that are still working. And there's doesn't make them less of a mom because they're working.
Women have to be careful of that, don't they? Like, men don't have to be careful of that, because I know right now if somebody told me, hey, you don't need to work, you need to take care of the kids, I wouldn't feel less like diminished by that. But I think culturally, like our culture is, we've spent a lot of time, and my mom falls in this category. She took care of, raised 4 kids while my dad was working.
Yeah.
My mom didn't get the credit that moms get today. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But moms today also have that double-edged sword. If there is a mom today who's chosen to work, or the family needs them to work, they're like, I do feel like other women go out of their way to be like, hey, if that's for you, that's okay. But as men, we don't, like, I know some stay-at-home dads. I don't feel a need to be like, you know, to point that out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think a lot of families make that decision because, frankly, you know, the mom may have more earning capacity than the dad, depending on what kind of profession they've chosen. So some families have smartly decided that mom should be the one that works and dad stays at home, and, you know, the kids benefit that way from it. So I just don't think it's fair to, like, say that those moms are, like,
right,
any less of a mom, or that I'm necessarily a better mom because I decided to stay home. That's just what I chose. So everybody has to decide for themselves. But it's definitely something that I talk about now when I, you know, whenever I'm speaking to younger people, whenever I'm doing a career day with, like, high schoolers or something. It's a conversation that nobody really had with me when I was growing up. Because I'm in the generation where girls were told, you can do it all. You can be everything. You can go have this amazing career, you know, go to college, come out, work, be a workhorse, you know, break down that glass ceiling. And that's great. It's awesome. And then somewhere along the line, you also may want to think about the fact that you're going to want kids. And how does that factor into your life plan? you know, the time that you'll be spending trying to raise a newborn, how does that factor into the career? How much, you know, it's just, I think it's sometimes unfair to not have that conversation with women in particular, because they need to know that going in, like somewhere in the life plan, that that may be, you know, what they want to do. And it's not an easy journey to navigate.
Saw a story in the New York Times today that has to do with China. I'm interested in China because, you know, like I mentioned in the last segment, Taiwan knew what to do because of SARS in 2003. Taiwan very quickly went into, like, we got to isolate. We, you know, and they avoided some of the nightmare situations that happened in other countries. China has this thing now. They're using apps. I'm not sure Americans would go for this. They're using apps to track people. You get a QR code that you have to scan. Business owners can scan your QR code. They can tell if you've been in high-risk areas in the last 72 to 48 hours.
Oh, that's so shiny.
And they can go, look, if you've been in a high-infection area, you're not allowed in the business. Also, airports are using them, and they're taking people's temperatures and recording them and making it part of your QR code. Like yesterday's temperature was 98.6.
Oh, wow.
Today you're good. Tomorrow you're good. So Americans, I don't think Americans would go for this. Do you?
I think there's a slice of Americans that would be like, oh, yeah, that's amazing. Let's crack down that way. No, I mean, China does a lot of things differently. The fact that, like, Wuhan is starting to have an outbreak again, and that China just, like, the city of Wuhan says, okay, we need to test all 11 million people right away because we had this, like, outbreak of, you know, sick people again with coronavirus that tested positive, is just mind-boggling to me. I mean, when you live in a communist country with controls like that, I guess you could just issue edicts like that and make it happen.
They've also had businesses that are saying we're doing split shifts. OK, so half the workers are coming in for this 8-hour period. Then the other half of workers are working overnight. You have no contact with each other. There's no everything gets sanitized. You get sanitized coming and leaving. And by the way, you have a QR code, too. They're scanning you as you come in and out to find out where have you been in the last 72 hours. And they're going along with it because it causes their economy to open up. Would you, let's just say from you standpoint for you, nobody knows where you've been in the last few hours. I've been on radio. You've been roaming around the world for all we know. Okay.
Been to exciting places.
Would you be okay with having a QR code that sort of said, all right, she was over at Costco. And by the way, they had a big outbreak over there and other people. And so, like, would you personally be okay with an app tracking
it? I just wouldn't be comfortable with that. I know.
But it's for the greater good.
I just don't think I would be comfortable with that. I don't think most Americans would be comfortable.
I don't know. I think there's a lot of boyfriends and girlfriends running around with Find My Friends on.
Yeah, stalkerazzi.
I think boyfriends and girlfriends know where they've been and
so
tracking each other.
I wonder with the China QR code then, if your social score is tied into that same QR code. Remember how like everybody has a social score in China? So like if you got cited for jaywalking or you have unpaid parking tickets, like that's part of your social score that is kept on record, which matchmakers in China can request. Because as you were telling me, there are more Chinese women than men. And so matchmaking services out there can request, like, hey, if you want to marry my daughter, you gotta pull up your social quotient score and show me what kind of citizen you are. Wrapped into that is whether
it's like a Black Mirror
personal
episode.
Debt. Yeah, except it's like real life. And as you cross the street, they have retinal scans so that your social score will be displayed on a billboard.
I kind of like that. I kind of like it.
Like this, John is a jaywalker, and now everybody in the vicinity knows
litterbug,
it.
Litterbug.
Yeah.
We were just talking about littering, how unattractive it was earlier in the show. Right now, the QR codes, it's in the early stages. It just shows red, yellow, or green. Depending on where you've been. So if you have been somebody who's like, let's just say you've been to like the wet market, you've been in all these high risk places, it would come up red. And so a business owner then would have the right to just say, bottom line, you can't come into my ice cream shop because you've been in some filthy places, you varmint.
You know, that reminds me, I used to work with a news photographer, and obviously news photographers drive for a living. They encounter bad drivers all day long. It's part of their frustration. And he said the ideal system would be if bad drivers were labeled with paintballs. So if you saw a car driving around
shoot
with
them.
Like red splotches, you would know that is a bad driver. You need to keep your distance from that driver.
I think that already exists.
Driving
I look out at
a dented car.
Cars that has a bunch of dents on it. Tell me that you haven't seen a car with a bunch of dents on it, like missing one fender, a brown door, and you go, oh man, I got to get around this guy really quick. He doesn't know what he's doing.
I'm going to park on the other side of the lot from him.
Got to get away from that guy. All right, leave it here. You got the BFT. If you missed it, the Oregon governor's office is working on guidelines for the return of youth sports. That's among the headlines today. I'll have more on that tomorrow on this show. I've got a lot of questions. The governor's office. My wife is in studio as she is daily at 2:30. Is this working for you? Coming in here at 2:30, chit-chatting, occasionally sparring with me?
Sure. Do I have the option to say no?
Yeah, you can be honest. I think if there's anything, like, you know, we have a very blunt relationship.
Yeah, sometimes it's too blunt.
We say what we feel. Like this morning, I got up. Adriana, Alabama Adriana, Judah, you'll like this. I said to my wife, I need some dignity today. I'm going to dress today with dignity. Because yesterday, I kind of just went with like a sweatshirt and... It's a challenge if you know you're not leaving the house, right? Like, you know, I'm doing the show. Nobody's going to see me. And so I was going to put on a pair of jeans and a nice button-up shirt and have some dignity. And instead, I'm wearing flip-flops and shorts and a sweatshirt. And she laughed at me and she said, this was dignity?
It was the way you made the proclamation shortly before donning what is essentially the same outfit you have worn for roughly 6 weeks.
I don't know what to do. Adriana, how are you dressing these days?
There's only been like one day in the past, probably about 10 days that I've worn, like 10 work days that I've worn leggings,
okay.
Which is better than normal, I feel like.
She's picked it up a notch.
She's stepping it up. How's Judah looking? Look over at him. Let's evaluate him.
He looks normal. He's wearing like, I don't know what kind of pants those are, like tan pants and a
khaki
and a plaid button up.
Oh, that's nice.
I got short shorts underneath though. Yeah. Right after the show.
Well, tomorrow, guys, I'm going to dress. Okay. Had enough of this. Need some dignity. I do think it's a challenge for people who are working at home and not having even a Zoom meeting. There's nothing visual I'm going to do. There's no point. There's nothing. But I get up and I'm like, I need a shower. I need a shave. You know, I brush my teeth. And then I say, you know what? It's time for me to put on grown-up clothes.
The question is, who are you dressing for, right?
Like, right now, I'm dressing for me. I have to. Tomorrow is a dignified day for me.
Think about it, though. Like, the average, like, the usual things that we put on that are considered dress-up work clothes don't make any sense. Like, for men, the tie. Like, talk about a completely impractical accessory that adds, I mean... a minimal amount of fashion to an outfit.
Thank you.
And then for women, like high heels. Like what ridiculous contraption is a high heel?
What's that about? The necktie has a history.
They were created by men to make us look quote unquote better and longer.
And longer.
But they were created by men, period.
Men, no woman would have created high heels.
Yeah. And no woman necessarily would have created the tie.
Necktie, 17th century, King Louis the 13th, and they wore cloth.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but If you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.